listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY
Musician.
Musician Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 152 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin, and joining me for this roundtable edition is Chris. Chris, how are you?
I'm good, although I had a little scare this morning. I am supposed to get on a plane early tomorrow morning to fly to Portland, Oregon, where you are. And it's a United flight, and I saw that United had grounded all of their planes in the, across the whole country.
What was that all about? I heard something about that.
It was like some sort of landing gear. The computer system that controls the landing gear, I think, had a glitch. So the FAA or whoever regulates that forced the airline to ground all their planes. But it's been fixed. So
you can't land a plane without computers these days.
We'll see. Hopefully I land correctly tomorrow.
Oh, man. I feel for people that are traveling for work and for being out on the road. All the years, like the last year where I was doing small town posts full time, almost all our tour dates were fly dates. And never once did we really miss a plane or have a delay that impacted any of our shows. It was quite amazing.
Wow. Well, you know, you were a contemporary Christian act, so the Lord was on your side.
I'm sure that was it.
Iron Maiden, on the other hand, that's why
their flights got canceled all the time.
That's why Bruce Dickinson had to learn how to fly, because yeah. God was trying to stop them.
Exactly. Well, we've got an action-packed show today. We have so much listener feedback, some great emails about Apple Music, some calls, some not about Apple Music, some about other topics. There are other topics floating around still, so much to get to. So we're gonna start diving in. But first, Chris, you may have heard me mention on this podcast that in October we are doing a DIY Musician Conference in Chicago, October 23rd through 25th. I'm going to be there, you're going to be there, and I think everyone listening to this podcast should be there. It's going to be a great time. But actually, really looking forward to that. We just want to make sure everyone knows that it's $49, and that's the early bird special price. It's going to go up at the end of July. That's July 2015, just in case you're listening to this podcast sometime in the distant future that you're not confused. July 2015, at the end of the month, it's going to go up from $49 to something much, much higher, like $79. But $49, bucks, yeah.
Which is still a steal for a two-day or three. What is it officially?
It's like two and a half, because Friday is going to be more some evening light content, just gathering. We're going to have a open mic night on Friday night. All day Saturday is going to be some great conference topics, and we're posting stuff about that on the DIY Musician blog, but also the website for the conference is DIYMusicianCon.com, DIYMusicianCon.com. And the cool thing is we're still getting ready to announce speakers, and we've started to announce some of the panel topics. The great thing about putting together this conference has been that in the spirit of this podcast, we are really making sure we're vetting people. We're making sure that it is really action-packed, actionable content that you as an independent artist can take and really either move your career forward, feel very inspired, learn something new, tips, tricks. It's not going to be the head of Universal blabbing about how they need to do something different with YouTube or whatever. I don't know. Those things can
be... I went to a music conference last summer, which will remain nameless, that was almost entirely a waste of time. It was, panel after panel of, very qualified, very smart people, but all theorizing about this stuff that had almost nothing to do with independent artists, like super high level... I won't even get into it, but it was just like, this is boring, and probably 80% of the people in the audience don't even know or care about what you're talking about.
Yeah, and so we're making sure that doesn't happen. You are going to Get your money's worth, and it's going to be a great event. And I can't wait to hang out with all of you. And yeah, so I mean, it's the cool thing also is that, you know, you go to a lot of panels, and it ends up being very lacking, or a lot of conferences very lacking in diversity. And we are making sure that lots of genres are represented. Lots of folks from different cultures and backgrounds and walks of life are going to be there. It's not going to be a conference that ends up on some of those websites out there that make fun of conferences that only have old white dudes speaking on them. So lots of diversity, lots of...
unlike this roundtable podcast, this podcast, there will be diversity.
There will be diversity. That's right. Hey, we've tried. But I'm really excited because I love, you know, if I hope it's come through in this podcast over the years that I love hearing from other artists. I love hearing different perspectives, how people are pursuing their career. And I think there's so much that we all can learn from each other when we do that. Plus, there's going to be lots of other professionals that are there to teach you and all that. So it's going to be a great event. I'm super excited to announce who's going to be headlining the showcase. I can't announce it just yet, but it's going to be great. And $49. Hope to see you there. And I'm actually headed to Chicago tomorrow to hang out with the good folks of Chicago, to start, doing a little prep work for the conference.
We might be crossing paths in the air then. Are you on a United flight?
No, I'm on American. So
okay.
So you're
safe.
Yeah, apparently. As far as computers go, I guess I'm safe. So anyway, also want to mention that we have some great sponsors that have really pitched in to make this a great event. That's Berklee College of Music, just came on board. Super excited to have them. They're going to be doing some great stuff there at the actual event. We have Rumblefish, who powers our sync licensing program. They're going to be there helping people understand how to take advantage of YouTube and other micro sync licensing opportunities. And Gig Salad, who is a company that helps artists make more money by all sorts of gigs and such. So those.
Yeah. And on that topic, I signed up with them recently and created a profile, which takes a long time, but it ended up, I had my doubts. It seemed like it was more geared towards weddings and those sort of event type bands. Anyways, I got my first gig offer. It was a wedding, but it was basically the bride wanted me to play one song, and it was like a bunch of money, but it was during this week when I'm going to be in Oregon.
Oh, bummer.
So I was like, it works. I could have made hundreds and hundreds of dollars for literally playing like 4 minutes.
Man, that's cool. I need to sign up with Gig Salad. So check all those companies out. We're super excited to have them on board. And Chris, all the music that, starting with last episode of the podcast and, you know, for the next like 8 episodes, all the music in the podcast I'm gonna use to license through Rumblefish. And I haven't, you know, picked out the music for this episode yet. So give me a theme or a vibe that I should go for, and I'll go license a bunch of music from Rumblefish to put in this podcast
an adjective for a
theme? like what are you feeling when you think about Apple Music, the launch? We're gonna be talking about it. What should we do?
Inquisitive.
All right.
I don't know if they have a category.
I don't know. I will do some searching on inquisitive. So all right.
If that doesn't work, just use a thesaurus and find a word that does.
Okay. Okay. We'll do. All right. Well, let's get to. We've got lots of stuff to cover, so let's get to it with some news.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
Music.
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 News.
Well, a lot has happened since our last Roundtable Edition, where we had our Apple Music preview episode. Things like Taylor Swift single-handedly saving the music industry, and Apple Music is now open for business. We'll have all our initial thoughts about the service and our reaction to the events leading up to the launch in our discussion portion of today's show. Well, believe it or not, there is some noteworthy news not pertaining to Apple Music. Videos uploaded directly to Facebook are watched more than 4 billion times a day, according to the social network. Not once their uploaders to be able to make money from those videos. The social network is testing a new suggested videos feature in its news feeds, which will see videos from partner publishers and creators recommended to Facebook users, with advertisements running in between them. According to Variety, Facebook will keep 45% of the revenues, with partners taking the other 55%. Fox Sports, the NBA, Hearst, Funny or Die, and Taste Made are among the first partners in that trial, which is currently restricted to Facebook's iPhone app. According to Fortune, ads will only be shown when Facebook mobile users watch multiple suggested videos in a row. Ads will play between videos, and the money will be split between the creators of the videos that came before and after the ad. We've heard constantly from media companies and other video creators that if they were able to make money from their videos, they would publish more, Facebook's vice president of partnerships, Dan Rose, said. Rumors are also flying that Facebook is in talks with the major labels to also monetize the music used in videos in a similar fashion to YouTube. We'll keep you posted with details as we have them. Only one more news item for today, since we have lots of discussion ahead. In sort of a news of the weird, maybe, Microsoft has rebranded its Xbox Music app as Groove Music, promising a catalog of over 40 million tracks and music for everything you do. The platform has been distancing itself from Microsoft's video gaming brand as a part of a new Windows 10 update. The same is true for Xbox Video, which has also been renamed to Movies and TV, moves which Microsoft says will make content more identifiable for our broad customer base. The change to the platform will launch first on Windows 10 PCs before rolling out to other Microsoft devices over the coming months. And that's the news I've got for today. That Microsoft rebranding of Xbox Music seemed like a curveball, and I don't know if it seemed like the best week for them to make that announcement.
Yeah, you know, and I don't own a PC, I don't own an Xbox. I'm like so out of that world that I actually don't even have a good sense of what effect that will have. Like, to just sort of at the surface, I think Xbox is such a brand that why would you change away from that brand name recognition? But you know, what do I know? I don't use PCs or Xboxes, so.
Yeah. You know, partly for, maybe might come up a little bit again in the discussion, but I will say that Xbox Music by far pays out the most for streaming from what I've seen. And part of it is because they bundle it into certain packages, so a lot of people pay for it but don't actually stream the music, so the music that is streamed gets a higher payout rate. So it's just, you know, I want Xbox, well, now Groove Music, to do well. I hope this means that they're doubling down on it and not just trying to have a knee-jerk reaction to Apple Music. It's the timing of the announcement kind of seemed like, hey, we're still here, you know, let's do something.
Right.
Moving to Facebook, I have to say, you know, this is an interesting development. But I'm not a big Facebook user. I tend to find myself checking it out a little bit more around the holidays, things like the July 4th holiday that just happened here in the United States. And, you know, other times like Christmas or whatever, when I know people are traveling or, you know, just doing family events or whatever, that they're posting stuff there more. But it's becoming harder and harder to make any sense of the Facebook feed. On the 4th of July, I had a video featured to me that was either from last 4th of July or the year before about a drone flying through fireworks that I saw very prominently the previous year on Facebook, that everyone was sharing. And so I'm like, I want to see something new. I don't want to see something that's a year old. And I saw other people complaining about that. And I've heard people mention the same thing. So it's like, I don't know what's going on, but a social network that I really have no idea what conversation I'm tapping into, it's really bizarre.
Well, probably that happens a lot on Facebook. People will share articles that are super old as if they're, you know, very new because something about the topic relates to something that's current. And then suddenly people start sharing it because they don't investigate it enough to know that it's old. And then suddenly it's trending. So maybe a bunch of your friends were showing this drone flying through fireworks video, and
I don't know. There weren't. It was like a featured video. It wasn't like it was somebody shared it. So it was weird. The other thing that happened is like one. There was a celebrity. Was it Andy Griffith, who died like 2 years ago? But because of the Facebook feed, suddenly on the anniversary of his death was featuring all these stories about him dying. I saw people posting on Twitter, Andy Griffith died today. And then all these people retracting, sorry, that happened 2 years ago. Thanks, Facebook. So weird. So anyway, the video monetization, I think, you know, it feels like Facebook's trying to decide which way they should go. If they want to become a video site, I think, you know, lots of videos are being used there. They certainly feature more videos in the feed than anything else. If you're an artist and you're trying to get your content to be featured more naturally without having to pay for it, video is the way to go. Uploading it directly to Facebook, not just posting YouTube links. So they're trying to get people to just engage with Facebook on video and not just as, you know, posting YouTube links. So we'll see what happens. I haven't heard much about the monetization of music. I'm sure we will shortly, and we'll keep you posted.
It seems like with Facebook, you know, it's not like they're having a comeback because they never really went anywhere. I don't know in terms of their users, what their user numbers are, but it definitely seems like users have adjusted to the idea of, you know, well, I guess I should say artists have adjusted to the idea that you're going to have to pay to reach your fans. It's like the way that Facebook is now set up, I hear way less complaining about it. I don't know if that's true in your...
Yeah, I don't know if people have just... I don't hear as many people complain about it, but I don't know if people are this maybe just don't care as much anymore. I don't know. No.
Yeah, I mean, I see tons of friends, bands, and labels that I know sponsoring posts, and so obviously they're getting on board and they're using it for what they can use it for. Whereas, you know, a year ago it was all about like no one's going to use Facebook, no musicians should be there, blah blah blah. But
yeah,
we've acquiesced, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, I've heard a lot of people, especially some of the younger artists, talk more about Snapchat. I'm not really into Snapchat. I've tried it out. I just don't care to try and start up another account at another site. I'm still holding on to my MySpace account, Chris.
They're gonna come back a third time.
That's right, and I'll be there. No, I think they cleared out everybody's data a while back. Well, let's get to the news of the day in Apple Music launch. Lots of artist feedback on that and people's opinions, frustrations, excitement. And I'm looking at Twitter right now because I posted something on Twitter as we started recording for people to weigh in over Twitter on the topic. And there's some commenting happening that we will get to. But Chris, what's your initial take? It's out there. No more speculation. Whether it's going to save the music industry, kill the music industry, we can now use it and make our own opinions. What do you think?
Okay, so the convoluted answer is I'm a little bit conflicted about it as it exists right now. At first, I really loved it. I love it as a user. I guess I should say that. As someone who wants to listen to music, I love it. It is linked to my listening history. You know, I can access all the things I have in my iTunes catalog or my iTunes library through it. It seems way more intuitive to me than I've read a lot of reports, people saying it's not intuitive. I found it very intuitive. Now, as an artist, the whole Connect thing is a little bit, you know, I won't say it's a dud, but it's certainly harder to access and use to share content with your fans. So that's the part that's a little like, I don't know. But at the end of the day, I'm still excited about it. And every time Apple launches a new product, you know, there's always kinks to work out, and as people subscribe, they're going to have even more motivation to improve the service. So I'm still excited, and I still think, yes, it might be the tipping point to maybe not save the music industry, but make the music industry enter the moment and find out how to equitably monetize music for artists.
Oh, that was well said. Very well said. My initial take was, one, I like the app. It does take some getting used to figure out where things are. I do like the way they're recommending playlists. That is one thing, you know, everybody talks about, you know, playlisting. That's the wave of the future is, you know, and we probably need to talk more about that on the podcast, about how to get your fans to create playlists, include your music and strategies around that. But anyway, so we get a lot of people have been talking about playlisting and how that was going to be a key feature of curated by humans in this new Apple Music app. And so before the launch, I went over to Spotify and I'm like, okay, there's a bunch of playlists here that they recommend. I'm gonna go ahead and dig into these and try them out. And I thought the playlisting on Spotify, the songs that were coming up, I thought were terrible. I mean, I was like, I don't know who's putting these together, but these, I'm really finding these playlists to be objectionable and not very well relating to what, like, there was like one summer driving music and I would be like, are you kidding me? You must not live. I mean, when I think of like summer driving music, I think of some very specific things. And what was coming up did not inspire me to think of summer or driving.
You were thinking of going like 60 miles an hour through like a country road, and they were thinking of like traffic in New York.
Yeah, stuck in traffic in New York trying to cross the Washington Bridge or something. I don't know. It was just, I didn't find them to match what they were saying they were very, very well. And the thing I've really liked about Apple Music is I've enjoyed the playlists. The thing I did notice is that playlists are shorter than I would expect, and it seems like a better feature would, once the playlist ends, would be to have it pop up with a button very clearly saying to launch a iTunes radio channel based on this playlist, and that way you can just have it continuously playing. Like, oh, I like this playlist, I want more. That's kind of how I was left. Like, I want more, but that playlist is done. So, you know, I've enjoyed that aspect of it. The Connect portion, you know, I opened up Connect, and this was, you know, several hours after it had launched, and there was already like some random posts by major label artists that probably were preloaded in there to have something when it launched. So no engagement. The post seemed not to be taking advantage of any of the features that they were going on and on about being able to post video and links and all that kind of stuff. They seemed like, you know, I keep getting this post by Muse, the band Muse, that just basically says, we have a new album out, and it seems very automated. And so I have a feeling there's some of that going on in order to make it feel like something's happening. And I found myself going, this is why indie artists are more interesting to follow the major label artists, because when you follow major label artists still and on most social platforms, for the most part, a lot of them seem very controlled, probably not the actual artist doing the work, and it just doesn't feel real or engaging, where I find that a lot of independent artists, they really need to and want to connect with their fans over these platforms, so they put a lot of effort into it, and it's more entertaining. So I found myself trying to find independent artists, and I, you know, there's some ways to help you follow folks. I found it challenging to dig down in there. You start after just searching for people, and so I think it still has a ways to go. It's the social network where it's only a certain select few being able to post still hits me as strange, and that, you know, that was kind of like the issue with Ping, is that it was only a select few people that could post. And so it's like, it's not engaging for music fans that want to post stuff, because they can't have accounts where they post stuff. And once I started getting into it, I found actually the most interesting feeds to follow was the Apple Music Alternative or Apple Music Rock, or because they were posting out, hey, here's some tracks by this band that's got a new album coming out. I'm like, hey, that's actually interesting to me. Muse keeping telling me that they've got a new album out over and over again on repeat isn't interesting to me.
Sure.
So,
I mean, one thing that made the launch a little strange in terms of Connect is that, And I don't think they've changed it. I think it's still the situation where you have to post from your phone or from an iOS device. Correct me if you...
No, I'm wrong, everything but... I've heard so far, that's correct.
And then you in order to access Apple Music on your desktop, you needed the latest version of iTunes. And when they first launched Apple Music, the latest version of iTunes was not yet available. So I don't know if it was later that day or early the next morning, they finally published the iTunes 12.2. So there was a day lag in even being able to people to access it on their desktop. But I actually have liked when I open up iTunes on my computer, going to the Connect tab, and you can see kind of the feed that way. And there are some artists I follow that are pretty good at, Tame Impala has put some video up of them making some new music, and Robin has posted some pictures. And so people are definitely using it in the way that we like expect indie artists to. But
yeah, and I've heard lots of stories of folks having issues with posting and claiming their accounts. Right before we recorded this, somebody told me that however they ended up going through with hooking Apple IDs to artist accounts, apparently people have been able to snag artists that they don't own and have them their profiles up for sale on eBay. That's just what someone told me right before I walked in here to record this. I know that I submitted something to claim one of our artist accounts, and I'm wondering if I just didn't go all the way through it. Like I was waiting to make sure that this to, you know, take pictures of the process, and then I forgot to go back and do it. But I thought I claimed the Small Town Poets account, and I haven't heard anything. I'll go back and do that today to make sure that... see how the process happens. Part of me is like, you know, the first day software launches, there's always bugs, and then they release a patch the next day or two, and everybody who waited feels like that was a good decision. Lots of issues. Now, this is the two big things that I think could have potentially hurt Apple Music. One is a bug that has apparently scrambled a lot of people's files on their hard drive. And Ari from Ari's Take, who contributes to our blog every once in a while and has been on the podcast, he emailed me. He's like, hey, are my tracks okay on your end? Because they're all messed up on mine. Like, he'll be on Apple Music and the tracks are swapped on his phone on the Apple Music side. So it should be streaming from Apple and not be the stuff that's on his phone locally or on his hard drive. And I went and looked, and they were perfectly fine on our end, and they matched up right. But on his end, they're all messed up. So like the software is like mixing things and getting creative with your music files.
And do you know for certain that he was not accessing that batch of tunes from the My Music?
Yeah, I mean he did multiple tests. You know, I trust him that. He was operating it correctly. He had some screenshots and stuff. He actually posted on it about it on Digital Music News. So there's that issue that's happening. But to me, what that points to is a bigger issue that I am still surprised that the tech world has not solved. And it seems like the direction that most companies are headed is actually making things worse. And that is with file management. There is fear that people who've built up large catalogs of music, that these services will accidentally delete them, remove them, mess them all up. And I think where Apple has kind of gone in a frustrating direction, at least for someone like how I use music, is they want everybody to have their own Apple ID. And so all these devices can be synced and all that. And it sounds great. But what really happens is I have one computer with my music catalog attached, and I don't want multiple Apple IDs having to access that catalog, because then it just starts to be like various people are messing up the catalog without knowing it. Mm-hmm. And then things get deleted. Things aren't syncing. You think you synced and you just deleted something, or it's just there's a long way to go with file management. It's almost to a point where I've seen some people go, you know what? I'm concerned. I'm actually concerned that I'm just going to wake up one day and everything I've purchased is gone. I'm fine with, you know, paying a monthly fee to just have access to music I don't own, but that doesn't mean I want you to delete everything I do own or magically convert it when I didn't tell you to, you know, to certain things. So that's one issue that I think is coming to the forefront in this whole launch. The other is, I think, the hidden sort of streaming music tax. I'd be curious to see what people who've been using Spotify or maybe even Pandora on their phones for a long time think. But
the data usage
on your phone, that's actually been the biggest concern for me. Like, when I'm traveling for work, I'll stream a lot of Netflix, like in the hotel room or whatever. And there was one month where I was doing some touring and traveling for work, and I had a massive data bill and didn't realize it. And I didn't think that I'd been streaming all that much music. It actually turned out part of the issue was I had started like streaming a bunch of podcasts, and instead of just downloading them when I had Wi-Fi, just like listening to them from the cloud, and it just sent me way over. So those are some other concerns. Like, I could see people next month getting their data usage bill and freaking out because...
Well, I also imagine that I can see that on like a long car ride or something like that. But that's definitely the benefit of, you know, they have these features where you can essentially download a certain amount of tracks temporarily through the streaming service. And then, you know, if it's 10 songs or whatever, hopefully that gets you between your home and work. Then when you're at work, you access the Wi-Fi and you can readjust those songs for your ride home.
Yeah. And they have that. And I, the thing is, like, I did that from work the other day, where while I was here, I was streaming music over the Wi-Fi we have here in the building. And then when I left, I was switching to some music that I knew I had on my hard drive, on my phone locally, but was also on Apple Music. And when I switched to My Music, it, you know, before there was indicators of whether or not those tracks were in the cloud or they were actually on your phone locally, those indicators weren't there. And I'm like, what's to say that they don't, I mean, how do I really know without turning my phone off that it is actually streaming the tracks I want them to, I don't want to be streaming this over my, you know, data connection on my phone. I want it off the tracks that I have on the hard drive, but they changed the interface and it's like, sure, I pushed My Music, but what does that mean? I mean, we've got, you know, someone like, I'm hearing people like Ari say that, hey, it jacked up that. So how do I know what I'm really listening to? So,
Well, I guess you just have to turn off your signal and see what happens.
Yeah. So anyway, those are some things that there's a lot of user interface things now that they have people using it that need to be ironed out and, you know, making it perfectly clear that, hey, this is like some sort of icon, logo, something that says this is being streamed from the what's on off of Apple Music or what's locally on your phone. Because the other thing why I thought the My Music one not showing those indicators anymore was frustrating is because it's very common for when you do a software update that Apple removes all your files from your phone and puts them back in the cloud if you're using the iCloud service. And so I've been on trips constantly where I get on the plane, oh, I'm going to listen to this and be like, what? It's back in the cloud and I can't download it while I'm on the plane. And so without those indicators there, how do I know that it's not that kind of situation where it's technically is my music and it should be on my phone, but it's streaming it from the cloud. So we'll see. That was my biggest frustration with it. I'm enjoying the discovery aspect of it. I hope they continue to enhance that. I hope they enhance it with more automated features. The playlists that seem to be curated by actual individuals are cool, and I'd like to see a lot more automated stuff where trigger playlists based on this track kind of
thing. You know, one thing we haven't mentioned, too, is Siri. I mean, that's a pretty cool thing. You just talk to your phone and say, hey, play me, you know, whatever, play Tame Impala's latest album on Apple Music, and up it comes. So, or you can even get, you know, play me the best dance songs from 1985 or something, and it's another great interactive discovery element.
Yeah, yeah, and that's, I think, one of the things that I think will be a very cool, useful feature, like, that they demoed, like, play the track from this TV show that I just saw on ABC kind of thing.
Oh, you know, another thing I thought of, I'm not sure if you said this, but in Apple Music trying to be such a engine for discovery and for sort of customizing playlists and whatnot to your taste, like, it's probably worth pointing out it's a brand new service. It hasn't had as much time as, you know, a similar service to learn your tastes and kind of get smarter about it. So a year from now, it might be all ironed out.
Yeah, and they are all in on this. I don't think this is, it's not a, oh, well, we tried type situation. And so they're all in on this. They're going to make it work. It's gonna be around for the long haul. So there's no backing down now. So it's funny, there's a lot of haters in the press just saying things like, this is, you know, they botched the launch, it's all over, it's done. And it's like, people just love being the negative voice out there on the web. Like, it gives them some sort of credibility to armchair quarterback some obvious things that it's just, I don't know. It's just funny.
I'm with you. I don't understand.
A lot of
the negativity about this.
But. Well, there's people that, you know, some bloggers out there in the music business space that they never say anything good about anything. And I'm like, you lose all credibility with me. You know, it's easy to sit there and say that they could have done this or that better. It's not easy to launch a product. I can say from working here, there's lots of moving parts and it's not easy and things will never go 100% perfectly. So,
one thing we should mention before we move on the DIY Musician blog, there are lots of recent articles about this. And one of them is, how to post updates on Connect. So if you're struggling with that on your phone, check that article out.
Yeah. And that was funny, 'cause I was talking to an artist last night, who was having some issues posting content. And I, for some reason, I was trying to leave a comment on his feed, and I would push the comment. It would show me comments, but the little window to leave a comment wasn't popping up. I'm like, how the heck do you leave a comment? And then finally I closed the app and opened it up and it was working. So there's still little bugs like that going on. Well, we got calls, we got some emails, and I want to get to them. First off, I want to say, if you want to weigh in about your experience with Apple Music, what you think, thoughts, comments, our listener line is 360-524-2209. Our email is podcast@cdbabypodcast.com, and you can leave comments on the site as well. So I want to get to this first email from Stevie Z, who's been showing up in the comment section as well. Thanks, Stevie. He said, great show as always. I'm glad you guys are helping dispel a lot of the myths about Apple Music. As always, when it comes to new things, some people get themselves really twisted up over things they don't quite understand yet. I do have two very interesting questions concerning Apple Music, though, one of which my non-musician wife brought up. First of all, she pointed out there is a make available offline option for albums. For example, I went to the Christmas album for Small Town Poets. Thanks, Stevie, for the support. Clicked on the make available offline and downloaded it to my iPod, and now I can listen to it offline. So when people do that, does it still count every time someone listens to each track? For example, if I put that album on repeat and listen to it 10 times offline over the next 2 days, I love Christmas music in July, he says. Then the next time I connect to Wi-Fi on my iPod, will it upload the data that says how many times I listened to it so the artist gets paid? Also, if I stream, say, 20 seconds of a song, does that count as a stream? Where's the line drawn? I know you guys are up to your armpits and Apple Music stuff, but we really appreciate the podcast and emails and comments and everything else. So thanks again, Stevie Z. Well, Stevie, to answer your question, first question about downloading it and then listening to it 10 times, yes, the second you connect to Wi-Fi, it will transfer that data back to Apple Music. So I guess in theory, if someone downloaded an album, listened to it a bunch, and never ever connected to Wi-Fi or their data connection again and canceled their Apple Music subscription, a couple plays might slip through. But in general, every time you connect to Wi-Fi, it's giving that data back. So those plays are accounted for. and you do get paid for them. Also, for the streaming, it's interesting that you selected 20 seconds because that is the cutoff for Apple Music. It does pay artists after a 20-second stream. Please don't go get any grand ideas of abuse, people out there who think, oh, I'm just going to go stream all my tracks.
21 seconds.
There have been people that have released albums with every track being 21 or 22 seconds or 30 seconds that have made big press. And I think we've talked about it on the podcast. So don't do any funny business. But yeah, 20 seconds is the cutoff. And with other services, it's actually a bit longer. So Apple is being gracious there. So yeah, that's where the line's drawn. And anything over that, it counts as a stream and you get paid. So thanks for that email. Let's see, we got some more here. Martin Kennedy, who has been with CD Baby for a very long time, his group's called All India Radio. A little anecdote about All India Radio. I discovered their music years ago because I was walking through our warehouse and saw their CD on the shelf and really liked the album art. And he does have very nice album art. And has this whole kind of visual thing going that's continuous through his entire catalog. Anyway, he said, I contacted Apple Music to ask how to update my artist image, which defaults to my latest album art, and there is no bio. This was their reply. To update your artist image profile, please reach out to your music provider and have them update your artist image on the iTunes Store. The artist image file you provide will be updated on Apple Music Connect and the iTunes Store artist page. So he's asking, can we do this for him? We are working to figure out the best solution for Martin for artists that are in the situation as yourself. I've got a little fix I can hook you up with. I'll email you about and we'll get you taken care of. But I can say that how they had planned to do this from what we knew and could see changed last second right before they launched Apple Music. So originally we thought it was going to happen one way. It appears it's happening in a different way now. And we're working to accommodate artists, all CD Baby artists who use us to get to Apple Music to make that happen. So details on that will be coming. And we'll keep people posted. Probably keep checking the DIY Musician blog. We'll definitely post something there when we know for sure.
And that's been a very popular question on the blog. Lots of commenters curious about how to update their photos and bios.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. So we've got a non-Apple Music question here from Jeff Schiller. We'll go ahead and answer this. Then we've got a couple calls that will take us back into the world of Apple Music. So he says, love the podcast and appreciate all the info. I have a couple questions. I write all kinds of music, songs, jingles, film scores. With the film scores, I don't own the rights to the video. Often I have rescored someone else's film or a scene from a big blockbuster type film. If I post these on YouTube, can I monetize the music I wrote through their monetization program? He's got a couple more questions, so I'll read them and then we'll take them one at a time. CD Baby Pro. I don't really have any albums of my stuff, although I'm working on that. CD Baby Pro sounds amazing. I'm already an ASCAP member. I noticed that the fee for CD Baby Pro is either per song or per album. A lot of my stuff is 30 to 60 seconds long, jingle length. It seems like it would be costly to pay CD Baby to register each one. Should I combine them into an album, say one called Jingles and called Film Score, something like that? And then last question. I'm a co-writer of the songs on an album that CD Baby that's called Too Hip to Be Smooth by a group called Table for Five. My partner on the album was Gene Hughes, who passed away a few years ago. I don't have any of the administrative login info for that account. He did all that. I've contacted his wife and she doesn't know or want to know anything about it. Wondering what I might be able to do to get that album on CD Baby Pro. Thanks so much, Jeff Schiller. So let's start with the first one, the film scores. Yeah, you don't have the right, if you don't have the rights to the video, they won't let you monetize it. That's the simple answer. However, it's entirely possible that you put your upload those videos, and depending on if they recognize the video content, they may let you, but it's best not to even bother going down that road because they could give some copyright strikes to your channel, which could permanently hurt you from monetizing anything you personally upload. So if you don't have the rights to the video, you cannot monetize it legally. And I make that distinction because sometimes YouTube may not notice something or may not be found that you don't own the rights to that video. And it seems like, oh, I'm monetizing. Everything's perfectly fine. And then suddenly you get slapped with a copyright strike. So usually the system catches up with you. And so if you don't own the video or don't have permission to use the video, don't.
But create your own, what do they call them? Album track videos.
Yeah. The interesting thing with this scenario, that I would recommend for Jeff is that he's writing songs and jingles. And so whatever keywords he's using that people would find anyway, keep using those same keywords. You can put in the description that you wrote it in a response to this film and, you know, use a photo or something instead. But yeah, using that footage is going to be a copyright strike. With CD Baby Pro, the best thing to do in your situation would be, like you say, you can make an album of like 50 tracks and release it as one album, title it, like you said, you know, film score or whatever. And we can admin the publishing on that for you. And for the co-writer situation, that's a tough one. That's a bummer. Believe it or not, we hear that kind of scenario more often than you would think. But, you know, we've got, you know, over 400,000 artists using our service, that happens, that scenario where someone, a part of the group has passed away. And whether it be an estate trying to sort out all their stuff, or like your situation, a co-writer. That one's going to be a challenge. I mean, there's a way for us to help you out. You're going to have to contact us here and we can help you out directly. It's probably going to be a little bit of legwork for you to prove some ownership. It's kind of a bummer that the estate doesn't seem to care in this scenario. And maybe they'll come around to it. I don't know how recent this was. It could be that they're still struggling with the loss and don't want to think about that stuff at this point. But just contact us and we can kind of help you through that. We got some calls, Chris, and we probably only have time for one of them at this point. So we'll do the Apple Music one and then I'll save the other one, which was a good call. We've got Dave King.
Oh, it wasn't Taylor Swift?
No, we'll close on Taylor Swift.
I thought she was going to be the caller.
No, did she call us? If she did, I missed it. I'm sorry. Yeah. Sorry, Taylor. But this is Dave King. He's got a call about Apple Music. Let's listen.
Hey, this is Dave King from DaveKingMusic.com. I have just a comment about the Apple Music show that you did. I think people are so used to getting music for free these days that coming up with a $10 per month subscription for Apple Music might be a problem. And I wonder if ultimately the way it's going to work out is that the Apple Music product will get bundled in with some other service that Apple sells. And then you would get like a package kind of a deal, and then it might seem like a more reasonable fee to subscribers. So anyway, that's my 2 cents worth. Again, Dave King at DaveKingMusic.com. And thanks. Keep up the good work. Enjoy the show. Thanks. Bye.
Well, thanks, Dave, for the call. I agree 100% that that's probably what eventually will happen, that these things will all be bundled together. You know, I'm sure that Apple has its sights set on creating some sort of Netflix-type environment and moving all these things together to one fee that just becomes your entertainment fee that we get, you know, all. How many Americans are there now? 250 million? 300 million?
I think it might be 300.
300 people, 300 million people in the U.S., you know, a good portion of them, like 150 million of them paying a monthly fee, plus all the people around the world. And suddenly there's lots of money, but probably with users that aren't, a good portion of people that aren't as engaged. And that actually works out better for you, the artist. That's why Xbox Music I was saying pays out pretty high streams. If you look in your CD Baby account, you'll see, and you've had some Xbox music streams, see, compare what you've been getting from that compared to like a Spotify, and you'll be like, whoa, there's a big difference. And that's because Xbox Music has been bundled in with other services that people may or may not be using. So,
well, another element I think is like the responsibility is still on the industry and artists to remind folks that like you're going to spend $9.99 on lunch one day or like two cups of coffee from Starbucks, and how much, you know, that's one meal that's gone. And how much more valuable is a song or an artist or an album that you love and you listen to forever? Like, so maybe that's naive of me to say, but I think like we're just going to have to get back to convincing people it's worth it to pay for music.
Yeah. And I don't know, you know, if he said people are used to getting it for free. I don't know that I'm used to getting it for free. I definitely know that it's an option. And you know, there's services out there like Noisetrade, and I think Noisetrade is a great tool to help you build your list. But this week, you know, the past couple weeks after getting their emails, I was wondering if services like that, while they do help you build your list, are they training people the wrong way at this point? You know, it's like I get free music constantly, as opposed to here's some tracks and how you can, you know, supporting the artist is kind of like beside the point. And they do have some nice features. I'm a fan of Noisetrade. I don't necessarily go, I'm used to getting it for free, but I definitely know, hey, there might be a free option for this album, you know, especially independent music. They've been trained to just make it for free because nobody cares, certain aspects. I've been hearing that more from people. And I'm like, I don't know if that's as much, you know, the artist not feeling like, hey, this has value and my fans will pay for it if I ask them to. And just not giving up and assuming that everyone's going to make it for free. And I know that with millennials and people that are younger, their perception on technology and music is different than an old guy like me. So,
well, I mean, I think Apple Music with the forced subscription model is an interesting bridge between, like, you're paying a little bit a month for the access to all this music that's out there. And then in terms of monetizing individual exchange, interactions with music beyond that basic subscription, then it's just the artist inviting you to spend time with their music. No one's forcing you to buy a $15 album just for a couple songs. And yet there's this sort of baseline, what would you call it? Like an admission that this access is worth something to me. So I'm just going to pay $9.99 and then I get to listen to what I want. Which I think I like it as a good compromise between the like totally free world and the world where you had to pay for everything individually.
Yeah, you know, the music industry did make tons of money for years and years and years off of people wanting one song off an album. I mean, and it was pretty common, even, you know, when I was in Nashville going to college and then signed to a label, that you would hear people say, all I need is one song to sell this album. And what they're saying is the rest could be, I mean, I've literally seen situations where like the rest could be crap and that nobody will ever want to listen to, but they'll go pay $15.95 for this album and we'll make a pile of cash because of this one song. And I've experienced buying an album like that where you're like, clearly they did not care. And it sucks as a fan. It does not make you a fan of the artist anymore. And so, you know, there was downsides to that world as well. And I think, yeah, I agree with you that it's, I'd rather start training people that, hey, it has value. Let's have some, you know, monthly something and get access than to just go search for it for free. That's better. And I think that there's still a lot of things that need to be settled and made better for artists. But, you know, one thing I was thinking about, kind of close on this, and this kind of ties in. We didn't mention Taylor Swift at all, really, about what she did. And everybody seems to know at this point that, you know, she tweeted out or posted a letter to Apple saying that artists deserve to be paid. And that seemed to be the straw that broke the camel's back that got them to pay for the 90-day free trial period. And so anyway, the one thing I was thinking about, you know, when I went off to pursue music, nobody anywhere was talking about the rights of artists. Nobody cared. In fact, one of my uncles told me, why do you want to major in music? You're never going to make any money. Nobody cared about the rights of the creator. It was not in the news. It was not something fans recognized. The industry at large was very happy to make piles of cash off the backs of artists. There are still plenty of people that want to make piles of cash off the backs of artists, but I think we've come a long way where, you know, we've got major legislation trying to get passed to protect the rights of songwriters. Things like what Pandora pays and streaming rates are making national news in a way that is trying to say, hey, are we taking care of songwriters? Are we taking care of the artists? Are they just making money and discarding the art? Those conversations are happening. I think that's something to be very optimistic about. When I was on a label and there was no one saying, hey, these are the things to watch out for, to protect your rights. And when you kind of get disillusioned and leave, it's kind of like, well, yep, that's what happens. You don't make any money, so get on with your life. And I think that those conversations have changed greatly. And I think that makes me optimistic about the future and the future of the craft as a musician and what the artist community can do. When we keep saying, hey, this has value, what we do has value. We need to figure out a way that it's going to work. Technology has changed the equation, but it wasn't rosy back in the day in the 80s or 90s either. So,
yeah, I was going to say, for anyone who's nostalgic about the good old days when you were guaranteed fame and fortune from your music, go listen to our episode about the Steve Albini keynote speech he gave late last year.
Yeah, and the idea of the dialogue amongst people that don't normally live in the music business space is about, hey, music songwriters have rights, they're being trampled on, music has value, and we just need to keep that conversation going, and eventually I think we'll end up where we need to be. I think that's something to be very optimistic about. So, and that, you know, some of folks like Taylor Swift, whether you think it was a gimmick or what, or yeah, when the biggest artist around actually says something, people take notice. Well, that's a start. A lot of them are happy to go quietly and collect their checks and not take a stand for anything. So it's whether it's a gimmick or it was from the heart, it's, I think, getting people to realize where the state of the industry is and how we can make it a better place. So, and I've been watching a lot of Silicon Valley, the TV show. So it's all about making the world a better place. Have you seen that show?
I've seen the first episode.
They make fun of how everybody presents their app and kind of like ties up the pitch with,
oh, yeah,
making
right.
the world a better place.
I watched the first episode with my wife, and I loved it, and she hated it. So we have not made it to the second.
Oh, man, you got it. Seriously. Not safe, not family friendly whatsoever, but hysterical nonetheless. So don't turn it on saying, Kevin said from the CD Baby said this is a great show, and turn it on with your kids and no, and be mad at me. I've warned you. It is not, but it is very funny with the sort of tech culture. So, all right. If you want to weigh in, our number again is 360-524-2209. Call in. I think it'll cut you off after 2 minutes, so try and keep your question as brief as you can. And we still have some more calls we didn't able to get to that I'll play next time. Weigh in on the podcast show notes. Email us, podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And DIY Musician Conference coming up in October. Get your tickets now at DIYMusicianCon.com. And thanks again to Rumble Fish for all the amazing music in this episode. What was the theme again, Chris?
Inquisitiveness.
Inquisitiveness. All right.
We'll I don't see. Even know if that's a word, but
I don't. It sounds like a word. It's probably an app name somewhere. But any final thoughts there?
No, I'll see you very soon.
All right. Yeah, that's right. We'll be passing in the air, and then I will see you next week. Yeah. So, all right. All right.
Have a good
trip. Yep. And thanks for listening to the show, and we'll talk to you soon. See ya.
Peace.
you this time, you bet it. I tried to fry your mind, I tried to turn you around. But on top of all our mighty pride, you went and knocked things down. Sister, can you manage without a mother to plan it? Say it, child, believe it. Your blood has set you free. I can tell your mad side that you lost your planets. Sleep alone, that's Saturn's sign, but I'm always here if you need it.
Been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.